To pioneer the future, this is the mission of your AAF. Army Air Forces, in cooperation with the American Broadcasting Company, presents Your AAF, a weekly report to the American people on its continuing operations throughout the world today and its adventures and research which are pioneering for your better world tomorrow. Later in this program, Your AAF will bring you an exciting report from Freeman Field, Indiana, where the best that German inventive genius had to offer during World War II is being harnessed by American air power. But right now, it's the all-soldier orchestra of the AAF doing some high and fancy flying of their own with Sometimes I'm Happy. Of warfare that every weapon begets its counterweapon. Radar was one of the miracle weapons of World War II. Can there be any effective defense against radar? For one answer to this question, we take you by Army wire recorder to a C-47 transport plane somewhere over Wright Field. Go ahead, Captain Bob Van Kamp.
This is your AAF reporter, Captain Bob Van Kamp, speaking to you from inside a specially equipped C-47 transport. We're flying somewhere over Wright Field, and our course is being carefully plotted on the ground by a radar station there. In just a moment, we're going to demonstrate for you how the Army Air Forces is developing counterweapons as a protection for the future. Here at my side is Lieutenant William J. Schoenberger of the Electronic Subdivision of the Engineering Division at Wright Field, who can tell us just what this special plane is equipped to do.
We're carrying a chaff dispenser.
Just what do you do with a chaff dispenser?
It gives the radar operation on the ground one whale of a headache. See that metal box back there in the radio room?
Yeah.
That's the dispenser. It was developed by the equipment laboratory at Wright Field. It contains a number of packages of aluminum foil. A roller mechanism will force the packages out the rear of the tube, but before they're released, an electrical stripper will cut open the box and fill the sky with hundreds of aluminum foil streamers.
But what's the object? What does this do to the radar detecting device on the ground?
Well, the radar waves being sent out from the radar station will strike these strips of tinfoil and reflect back, just as they bounce back when they strike this plane. The radar operator won't be able to tell which of the countless objects on his screen is the plane. Watch. We'll call in right field and show you how it works. C-47 to radar station. Over.
Radar station to C-47. Over.
We're dropping chaff in 5 seconds. The mic is yours. Over and out.
We're speaking to you now from the radar station at Wright Field. In front of us is a round glass screen, and on it we can see a moving object, a small pip of light. It's a radar picture of Lieutenant Schoenberger's C-47 flying a few thousand feet overhead. We know his exact position and speed. Now, the chaff dispenser on that C-47 is beginning to scatter tinfoil. We can tell because the radar screen is now cluttered with dots, thousands of them. You can't tell where the plane is now. Captain Skane is standing beside me, operating this radar detecting device. What do you do now, Captain?
Not much we can do. Those strips of tinfoil are all reflecting the radar waves as they fall through the air. You could hide a half dozen B-29s up there and we couldn't see them.
That's really getting results from a few pieces of tinfoil.
Yes, and it's the very tinfoil you've been missing from your cigarette packages and candy bars.
Really amazing. But what's the future significance of this kind of countermeasure?
Well, out here in the laboratories at Wright Field, every time we develop a new weapon, we're concerned with building something to counteract it, whether it's radar, rockets, or atomic energy. We need to keep looking ahead for counterweapons as a safety factor for the future.
Thanks a lot, Captain Skane. From this demonstration of radar versus its counterweapon, chaff, we can see how the Army Air Forces is carrying on a constant research and development program for the safety and protection of mankind. From the Air Technical Service Command headquarters at Wright Field, this is Captain Finch returning you now to your AAF in New York.
While the nation returns to ways of peace, the mission of Wright Field continues by ceaseless research to guard that peace, to keep America first in the air. Now from the air crew, a salute as they take off on a little mission of their own, American Patrol.
We must be vigilant, we must be vigilant, American Patrol. With arms for the Army, ships for the Navy, let this be our goal. Must be diligent, we must be diligent, American Patrol. Protect our shoreline to the doorline of every native soul. We need this solidarity or else divided we will fall. It means the popularity of peace and happiness for all. Behind this cause we must keep rallying. Let there be no dilly-dallying. Keep free from chilly-shallying. Hark to freedom's call. Hark to freedom's call. Banners make tyranny tremble. Be ready in American patrol. To arm the Army ships for the Navy, let this be our goal. We must be diligent American patrol. Protect our liberty, American patrol. We must be diligent American patrol. Keep on, must keep rallying, let there be no silly dally. Keep free from chilly shally, and let this be our goal in American patrol.
Someday the historians of World War II will devote a special chapter to music, dealing with songs both brave and bawdy, songs reflecting the never-failing humor of the American fighting man. To present one of these songs for the first time on the air, we take you by Army wire recorder to a party given by GIs of the 10th Air Force in Kunming, China. Come in, Kunming.
This is your AAF radio reporter speaking to you from 10th Air Force headquarters in Kunming, China. We've wandered, with our microphone, into the headquarters squadron enlisted men's club, where a big dance is taking place tonight. Music, refreshments, and, of course, ladies. In fact, it's almost a stateside affair. Right now, it's intermission time, and we're sitting at the piano, and with us is Staff Sergeant Mickey Fedor of Hollywood, California. We understand Mickey was a former special material writer before Uncle Sugar, Uncle Sam, diverted his talents to the 10th Air Force Public Relations Office. Well, we have the microphone set up right here, and we can let Mickey say a few words. What say, Mick? How about saying hello to the folks back home?
Sure thing, Ed. Hello, everybody. It's seeing you around Christmas, I hope, I hope, I hope, I hope.
Well, say, Mick, they tell me you've knocked off a couple of tunes since you've been overseas, and I understand one of them is a 10th Air Force song.
That's right, Ed. It's a little number called Over the Hump that I dedicated to the 10th.
Tell us, when and where, and when did you get the time to write it?
Well, it all began up at Michinaw, Burma. I wrote the song there, but by the time I found an arranger to score it, the means of putting it on paper, we'd gone through the entire Burma campaign and flew over the hump to China.
So your song Over the Hump followed you over the hump. So it finally caught up with you here. Now, how about giving us an idea of how it goes?
Well, not much of a singer, but I'll try to give you a pretty good idea.
Say, what about some of you boys backing them up on the second chorus?
Yeah.
Okay, Mick, let's have it.
Over the hump, Japanese jump, when our bombardiers appear with bombs away, climbing the ridges to Mandalay, busting the bridges along the way, the men of number 10 are there to stay, flying supplies up in the sky, and if zeros take our heroes by surprise, out of the heavens, the P-47s come in with a mighty roar. With guns ablaze, the ends of days, if Japs that fly no more. Over the hump, Japanese jump, at the thunder of the 10th Air Force. Over the hump, Japanese jump, when our bombardiers appear with bombs away. The ridges to Mandalay, crossing the bridges along the way, the men of number 10 are there to stay, flying supplies up in the sky, and if zeros take our heroes by surprise, out of the heavens the P-47s come in with a mighty roar, with guns ablaze they end the days if Japs should fly no more. Over the hump, Japanese jump, at the thunder of the 10th Air Force.
That was all right, all right. That was the 10th Air Force song entitled Over the Hump, an original number sung by the composer himself, Staff Sergeant Mickey Fedor, backed up by the boys in the band. Thanks for the show, fellas, and I hope the song gets the recognition it so well deserves.
Your AAF radio reporter at a party of the enlisted men of the headquarters squadron of the 10th Air Force in Kunming, China. So while we continue with the party, we return you to the United States.
This is your AAF, the official program of the Army Air Forces. Each week, thanks to Armed Forces Radio Service, this program goes winging round the world to GIs overseas, wherever they may be.
For them and for you, Sergeant Bob Carroll chooses a song. For atomic power, Germany was losing when the European war ended. But by war's end, our enemy had scored heavily with other secret weapons. For a grim reminder that ceaseless vigilance must always be the price of freedom, we take you by Army wire recorder to Freeman Field, Indiana. Go ahead, Captain Howard Finch.
This is your AAF reporter, Captain Howard Finch, speaking to you from Freeman Field at Seymour, Indiana, the scene of the most ironic anticlimax to the greatest war in world history. I'm standing on a flight line that looks much like one of the preposterous enemy airfields pictured in comic books or an imaginative scene from a, shall we say, a Flash Gordon movie. Colonel Harvey C. Dorney is standing beside me, and he's going to tell us why this flight line is dotted with swastika-marked planes.
Captain, you're standing on the only field in the United States that handles nothing but captured enemy equipment for the Army Air Forces.
Well, Colonel, what are these fabulous planes we see located up and down the field?
They were Hitler's last-ditch secret weapons, the planes that were going to win the war for Germany even after we crossed the Rhine.
And what are they doing here now?
We scoured Europe for these planes, Captain. They represent the best that German inventive genius could do to save the Nazi government. Some of them are fantastic, of course, and deserve little consideration. but others involved new ideas and principles that might have become a real threat to our war effort. We brought them here for intensive study.
Colonel Darney, what's the object of this study? In other words, what did you hope to accomplish?
Well, the original idea was to copy the best German work and throw it into the fight against the Japs. But VJ Day changed all that, and now we're searching through this morgue of the Luftwaffe to find new ideas that will help keep the American Air Force the best the world has ever known.
Yes, this equipment must certainly include a wealth of new ideas. Jet planes, suicide rockets, junkets, Messerschmitts, but despite the vaunted genius that put them together, they folded up under the increasing pressure of the American Air Force. Standing alongside me now is one of America's most famous war correspondents, Ted Malone, who flew in a few minutes ago to look over this great new installation. All last winter, you heard Ted from all parts of war-torn Europe, many times describing the havoc that these planes and others like them were inflicting at the time on France and Belgium and Holland. Ted, how do they look to you now that they're down here on the ground for a change?
Can't think that's a place where I think all of us like to see them, on the ground, and the harder on the ground they are, the better.
And so far, with what you've seen, Ted, what do you think of the exhibit?
Frankly, I've been amazed. We had a lot of stories over there about the remarkable secret weapons that these fellows have been building over there, but to come out here and see some of these, one of them over here saw in the corner that it apparently takes off vertically, and then it ejects the pilot, I guess it drops off the tail first, and then it ejects the pilot. I never have found out yet what happened to the plane.
Have you, Ted, run into anyone that you know? Have you run into any surprises or anything like that since you've been here?
Twice already in the last 5 minutes. One of them was yourself. I think last time we met was someplace in Paris, and I won't tell under what circumstances.
All right.
And then I met Colonel Kopreski here a minute ago, and the last time we met was in London. When he came over, he was then leading ace in the European theater, and he agreed to do a broadcast interview with us. So on, I think it was Tuesday, we prepared an interview and recorded it to send back to the States. Came into the States on Friday morning, and Friday afternoon, Colonel Gabreski was reported missing. And so that interview was put on ice, and I never did get to use it.
Well, so you two can get together in a few moments and do a lot of reminiscing. And now we've moved our mics to the runways here at Freeman Field, where ground crews are preparing to start two famous German fighters. One is the conventional FW-190, a single-seated fighter, one of the Nazis' best and most extensively used, with a high speed of about 395 miles per hour, a range of 525 miles, could climb 18,000 feet in about 6 minutes, a little over 6 minutes, and had a service ceiling of about 36,500 feet. The test pilot is ready, and here's the sound of the famous Focke-Wulf 190. And that was the FW-190. Now the other plane ready for demonstration here is the famous single-seated jet fighter, or the ME or Messerschmitt 262. The jet fighter had a high speed of 530 miles per hour, a range of about 90 minutes flying time, could climb 8,750 feet per minute with a service ceiling of 30,000 plus. It carried bombs and two external bomb racks, had four nose-mounted cannons. The deepest penetration of the 262 with bombs was about 160 miles at an altitude of about 13,000 feet. And now, here is the weird, screaming sound of those two jet motors as the ground crews prepare to start them up. The high-pitched whine as the turbines get underway of the Messerschmitt 262, probably Germany's greatest jet fighter. The thought and the philosophy behind this collection of enemy equipment is tremendous. These are the spoils of war. The swastika marked planes here took good American lives. The AAF has taken a lot of time and expense to bring these planes from Europe to Freeman Field. But the discoveries made from a close study of these planes will help American industry produce better planes for the AAF. Planes that will make sure that no future war will come to claim more American lives. Our enemy was smart. Here at Freeman Field, we're claiming the fruits of his genius as part of our share in the spoils of World War II. We return you now to your AAF in New York.
From the Channel ports of France and the shores of Okinawa, from many another far-off place, come our returning soldiers in ever-increasing numbers. Now, with a toast to the day when all our men have returned, it's the all-soldier orchestra of the AAF with When Johnny Comes Marching Home. Peace, to pioneer the future, this is your AAF.
This is the American Broadcasting Company.